Dear Mort, how do I lessen the distance between my spouse and I when any free and available time he has, he chooses to spend out with his friends? I try to follow the principle of talk less and do more, but worry that if he is never around, how will he see what I'm trying to do and how I'm trying to change? We live in the same house, have a three-year-old, but we rarely see each other because we're both working. After work, he chooses to be out all evening and night, returning every day around 3 to 4 a.m. in the morning, and then is back to work at 7 a.m. He breached my trust twice with infidelity, and my response to that was becoming completely cold and negative towards him. He did try to reach out to me, and I didn't give him a chance, and now I see a role reversal where I try to reach out, and he's not there. Where and how do I begin? Okay. So I'll mention two things here that might at least help a little bit, set you in the right direction. First of all, you mentioned that there's very little time together, partly because, I know not exclusively, but partly because you both work. If, God forbid, you or your husband or your child were in the hospital in intensive care, in critical condition, my guess is that your work schedule would change in order to accommodate this crisis. You wouldn't go to work every day. If you did, you certainly wouldn't be there all day. Your life would have changed, and your commitment to your work would probably change too. Well, your marriage is in intensive care. And if part of the reason, I understand it's not the whole reason, but part of the reason is if that you're not able to spend time with and see and have access to your husband is because you're working, then it might be time to consider taking some of those vacation days. It might be time to consider renegotiating an amended work schedule with your boss. You get the idea. I don't know exactly how you're going to do it. I don't know your work situation. But you should make a special effort to invest more time and energy into your marital situation. And if that means that you have to tone down the amount of time and energy you put into your work, then do it. Do it. It's not permanent. And if you have a boss, you can explain it. It's not a permanent situation. I have something going on that's personal. I need some more time and energy. I'm not quitting. I'm not resigning. Maybe you have the opportunity, by the way, to take a sabbatical. That might be an option. But that's really not necessary. You know, in most cases, you don't need to quit. You don't need to resign. You don't even need to take a sabbatical. But very often what people do need to do, or I should say what they should do, that more often than not, they don't. But what they should do is modify their work schedule to accommodate this crisis, just as you would do if it were a crisis of physical health. Don't just assume that the work situation is a given. And now, you know, how do I manage my marital situation with that work situation as a given? The work situation is not a given. That shouldn't necessarily be the top priority. You know, it, just as a quick tangent, you know, very often people come to me with what they think are very complicated marital situations. Sometimes even I'll see on my calendar that a person has scheduled multiple sessions, you know, weeks and weeks in advance. And when I am on the first session with them, sometimes within 20 or 30 minutes, I jump in and I tell them, you know, you should cancel all your future sessions. You don't need me. You need a new job. Sometimes people think their marital situations are so complicated because their perspective is that there's a certain career track or a certain career situation that's a given. And now, Mort, can you help me work my marital situation given that work situation? And the fact of the matter is, there are plenty of careers and plenty of jobs that are just not family friendly. You can't get from here to there when you're in that job. When I say from here to there, I'm speaking maritally. You just can't do it. And very often, it's not so much that a couple has marital problems. It's that they really have a career problem, a job problem, and that is what's manifesting most of the problems and challenges in the marriage. For example, don't misunderstand this example. I'm a big patriot. I love my country. Thank God we live in America. But working for the military in certain situations should really be reserved for people that are single. It's just not a family-friendly situation. Careers where men and women get deployed for 6 months, a year, 2 years at a time that they're away from their spouse and children. I mean, how are you supposed to run a family like that? How are you supposed to have a connected, successful relationship? It's practically impossible. Another example would be, you know, careers where the boss or the company has a culture where they expect a person to work 14, 15, 16 hours a day, crazy stuff like that. It's just not family friendly. Some careers require a lot of travel. I mean, I do some traveling, you know, a little bit here and there, but some careers require a tremendous amount of travel. I mean, the typical week, a person could be away 3, 4, 5 nights a week. It's just not family friendly. We teach our kids, you know, as we begin to speak to our kids about careers and jobs and what they think they'd like to do, you know, they're getting old enough now where they're not saying they want to be a fireman. And sometimes they, you know, they'll mention a career or job possibility. And they want to know what we think. And we'll tell them, that's not for you. Really? Why, Daddy? What's wrong with that? It's not family friendly. You might like the work. You might really be making a significant contribution, making a difference. Maybe you'll even make good money. But it's not family friendly. And therefore, you don't want it. Let somebody else do it. You know, I occasionally get calls, not so many anymore because I think the rep is out on me. But I used to get a number of calls, you know, when reality television became big. I know it still is, but when it first started, I got a lot of calls from producers that were interested in me being the host of reality television shows that, you know, related to marriage and relationships. And very often they would come with this pitch, you know, about the recognition, the fame, the money, the difference that I could make. I mean, you know, they'd have this whole sort of pitch, and one of the points in the pitch was that, you know, we're going to fly you to the Bahamas. You know, they always film these things in these exotic places. We're going to fly you to this exotic island for a month, and you're going to work with couples, and you're going to film there. And my first question was, I just interrupted them, and my first question was, are you going to fly my family to be with me? And they would sometimes, like, skirt the issue, you know, kind of chuckle it off, like they thought I was kidding. Five kids, you know, they thought I was kidding. I'm not kidding. Are you going to fly my family and put us all up there for the month? Because I don't care how much money you're offering. I don't care how many networks it's going to run on. I don't care who the co-host is. I don't care about anything. All I care about is one thing. I am not going to be away from my family for a month. There is no amount of money. There are no circumstances that could result in me making such a decision. And so that's my first question. You got to be able to answer that question to continue the conversation with me. We never got past that question. I don't know if they thought that it would distract me from my work, or if they just didn't want to deal with five kids running around on an island. I don't know. But all I know is that they were never willing to fly my family down there, and I was never willing to be away from my family for that length of time. And, you know, was that maybe a compromise to my career? Is it possible that my career could be at a different place if I had been willing to do those things? Is it possible that I could have maybe helped more people and been more famous and made more money or whatever? It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But so what? My first responsibility is it's not to your marriage, it's to mine. And the truth is, I can't do your marriage any good if mine is not in tip tip-top shape. And so that is my top priority. And I think that's one of the things that really enables me to do what I do well, because I think, and many of you have told me, that you can really feel coming through my materials, my writings, and even on these teleconferences, that I'm the real thing. I mean, this is it. This is me. I don't just teach this. I live this. You know, this is my marriage, too. And that's important. That I think anybody that's in the kind of role that I'm in, you have to be a live wire. People have to be able to not only appreciate the logic of your words, but they have to be able to feel in you that there's an authenticity and that you live what it is that you preach. So anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent, but one that I thought would be useful to people. Getting back to NK's question, the other thing I wanted to mention in terms of the inaccessibility as your husband is that you need to employ the principles and practices that I'm teaching to whatever degree you can, even without your husband's access, and you can. Sometimes people make the mistake of sort of assessing their situation and saying, gosh, you know, I wish that my husband would go out on a Saturday night with me and spend a whole evening for date night. But that's just not happening. I mean, my situation is not in that place. And the fact that they can't do it the way they want to do it, the way they wish they could do it, the way they hear other people doing it, discourages them from taking the small step that they could take and doing it in a way that's currently appropriate for their situation. And that's a huge mistake. That's a disaster. You can't focus on what you can't do. You've got to ask yourself, how can I apply this situation? How can I apply what Mort's teaching to my situation? Take a small step. Okay, I can't take the big step yet. I can't do it the way I want to do it. But I can do this. And that's a step in the right direction. That'll give me a little bit of momentum. That'll move the needle just a little bit. So I'm really making two different points here. Let me break them out and make them clear. One is that there are things you can do without your spouse's cooperation, reciprocation, or participation. And I'll give you an example in a second. The second is there are things that there are things you can do with an obstinate spouse that requires really minimal participation or cooperation. So the example of the first point, what could you do without your spouse's cooperation or participation? Well, for example, one of the major sections in the program, I talk about the importance of really coming to understand your spouse, to know them deeply, by observation, by asking them questions, maybe by making lists. And then, here's really the punchline, then giving them gifts on a weekly basis that reflects your deep knowledge of them and results in them feeling understood. Now, NK, I don't care how many hours your husband's working. I don't care what time of the night he's out to with his friends. I don't care how much he tries to ignore you. You do not need his participation, cooperation, or reciprocation to give him a gift. You don't even need to be in the same house. It sounds like you are, but for those of you that are separated, you ever hear a snail mail? You know, you can send it to their home, you can send it to their apartment, you can send it to their work. You don't even have to be speaking to them to be able to do that on a weekly basis, and you should do it on a weekly basis. Just because they won't pick up the phone and just because you can't have the ideal talk charge doesn't mean you can't do a talk charge. It could be that your talk charge right now, given your husband's obstinance, is that you leave a 30-second sweet message with a funny story on his voicemail, and that you do that every day. You've got to be willing to take the small steps that are available to you and not let the negativity of your situation discourage you and paralyze you from taking any steps. I'm telling you, I know a lot of you are in difficult situations dealing with very difficult spouses. I'm telling you that the people that are successful, that are in your situation, are the people that never say, I can't. Instead, they always ask, how can I? How can I apply this, whatever this is, whatever I'm explaining, to my situation? What small step could I take? How could I move the needle just a little bit? You know how you jump 10 feet high? How do you jump 10 feet high? 1 inch at a time. And most of you are feeling so desperate to have this nightmare go away that you're spending too much time and energy looking for, you know, the Herculean event that's just going to clean all this up and give you relief. It doesn't exist. It's never going to happen. The people that are successful are the people that are dogged. They are relentless. They do not let the rejection get to them. They just keep their nose to the grindstone. They internalize the principles and practices. They find ways to apply them day after day, after week, after month, after month. You know, sometimes people ask me, Mort, you've seen so many situations, so many marriages, both succeed and fail. What is the one variable, what would you say, that is the best predictor of the outcome of these situations? It's an interesting question. Now, what I'm going to share with you is not scientific. I don't keep data on such things. But I do get to see thousands and thousands of situations. And after all these years, I definitely do have a feeling, an intuition as to what the answer to that question is. And I'm going to share it with you. The answer to the question is the people that are successful. There are many variables. Before I answer this, let me just say, there are many variables that impact the answer to that question, and it's not black and white. But if you were to force me to pick, you only get to pick one. You have to answer the question. I would say that the one variable that makes the greatest contribution to a successful outcome, a successful reconciliation, and the one variable that almost all success stories have in common is endurance. It's consistency, a certain doggedness. People that write those success stories were relentless. They did not take no for an answer. They did not allow the rejection to derail them. They just kept pounding away. Because eventually, love conquers all. I know it sounds so trite and so silly, but it's really true. You're looking to get through to your spouse. They're putting up a brick wall. Yeah, they'll do it for a while. And if you try to convince them of something, or you try to attack them, or you try to be manipulative, then the brick wall will stay up forever. But if you just love them, if you just do the right thing, if you fix yourself, if you form great habits, and if you're relentless in demonstrating unconditional love and affection, eventually the wall melts. It just melts. Let's go on.